or not gambling.
Yeah, Doug.
Yes, what's up?
It's 7 o'clock. Can you read it right there? Seven bells.
Ah, you're on time tonight. I love it.
Yeah, and I would have been on time last week. You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. It's like 7 o'clock still.
Right.
Aboriginal voices. We're continuing to talk about that song,
The House of the Rising Sun.
House of the Rising Sun. And
how it got passed down from years ago to
And it's that, and good for them. I didn't realize the song was so old. Long in the tooth, I guess.
Oh.
And I did not know that. Anyways,
I just want to do something here that, to see how you feel about it. I'm just going to play the first part of this. Not that one. This one. Where are you? Computers.
That part.
How's that?
Yes.
Did you have an image when you heard that start like that?
Yeah.
You did? Hmm.
It's still the same image, and it's not what I thought it was.
Oh, is that right? No.
I don't know. I don't know.
Even originally, this is just as kind of a historians looking back in time. Originally, this song was sung in the home as they didn't really go through their teens, so they would have been kids 12, 13, 14 years of age, and before they were going out to work in the out of the way from the farm and wherever, going to town or something like that.
Cautionary tale.
That's right. But
it's like a Ring Around the Rosie kind of a deal.
Exactly. Did you sing that when you were young?
Ring Around the Rosie?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What's a posy? That's what I could never figure out.
Isn't that the flower?
Oh, okay.
Isn't there a posy flower or something?
You got
pocket full of posies. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Posy, I think it is.
It's not, not money, eh?
Let me look it up.
Okay, but that's like this song. So what listeners might like to do is go and check the lyrics by each of the groups or individual singers. And the lyrics from Twin Flames that we played there in the last hour, right near the end, compared to June Bug, who was singing there, or The Animals, or go back to Ashley. And you can even go further back, because there are the changing of the subtle changes of the verses and the changing of the people or the actions that they tell you to worry about. But it's really good, because it's kind of funny to see the history of songs through a changing of language.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Ring Around the Rosie, you were a kid.
Yeah, it's about the plague. Mm-hmm. I knew that.
About the plague.
That it was about the plague. But I always thought posies were flowers.
Mm. And what were they?
I don't know. I can't find it.
Oh, no.
Let me see. Of course, I was spelling it wrong, right?
Oh, okay. So that has something to do with...
Right there. Flowers.
Flowers, okay. But that has something to do with the plague.
Yeah.
When was the plague?
Back in the day.
In the
1863. Oh, no.
1665. Whoa, yeah. Okay.
It's the bubonic and the pneumonic.
Ooh. So it was kind of like what happened to people during our pandemic.
Yeah.
From a couple
maybe
of years,
make
4 years
a
ago.
Rhyme about that one.
Hey, I'll bet somebody has. Let's find out. That'll be our next adventure.
Make one of those ring around rosy for the COVID. One for Jack, one for Jim, and one for little Moses.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of it, yeah.
Do you remember that, or did you just share that?
I don't know. No, it's on here.
Oh, okay.
Anyways, been a while. gosh, 4 score and 7 years ago.
Wait a sec. You're not talking about me,
I
are you?
I learned this little thing here.
Yeah.
I don't even know what I think I read, thought ashes, we all fall now.
Oh, okay.
You don't know that one?
No.
Yeah, it's not on here either.
No. Well, it'll tell you what this group says, because it's got the text there.
Oh, it's at tissue, we all fall down.
Yeah, because you're sneezing?
I was young, yeah. Mm. I just read it as ashes. I just heard it as ashes.
Well, there you go. You were like me.
Yeah.
But you could sing. You're musical, so I like that. All right. I have a song because this is really important. Adrian Sutherland wrote a new song called
song.
Respect the Gift.
Respect yourself.
No, respect the gift. That's more important than respect yourself.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Where do we go from here? The end is surely near. Where do you go, my dear, to mend your broken heart? Are you a slave, my friend? Are you the living dead? You can't change the world if you don't do your part. You gotta give it all you got.
Are you worried about the climate emergency and looking to do something about it? Join the Kingston Climate Justice Coalition for a special town hall event on Saturday, September 28th. Space is limited. Follow at Climate Coalition CA on Instagram and Facebook to register and learn more.
This September, KPP Concerts presents a stacked lineup of shows at the Broom Factory featuring everything from big-name acts to local gems. On September 12th, check out punk legends DOA with opening sets by The Meringues and Owl Farm. On September 13th, Kingston's own Oak Ridge Avenue hits the stage with Ottawa Rockers, The New Hires. On September 14th, pop-punk and emo cover band Strike Tyson will play alongside local acts Sonic Souvenir and Squid Pistol. September 15th, folk singer Katie Tupper will play a matinee with Kingston's own Luella opening the show. On September 16th, punk heavyweights Authority Zero and Belvedere with special guests Melon Ball are performing. On September 18th, the legendary Martha Wainwright plays live in Kingston. On September 20th, local rockers Cassador return to the Broom Factory with Sparrow Blue. On September 21st, Nova Scotia's Mo Kenny will play a show. And on September 28th, don't miss Virginia to Vegas with special guest Alex Porat. For more information and to buy tickets, visit kppconcerts.com.
Thousands of opinions are at our fingertips. But are all opinions informed? Does your information have a source? Is your social feed based on fact? Only facts can uncover the truth. Professional journalists are committed to balanced and nonpartisan reporting, to independent commentary. They cut through the spin to give you the information and perspective you need. Journalism is essential to democracy. A watchdog over the powerful, an independent voice. Journalism is more important than ever.
Hey, I'm Julian Taylor, and I'm excited that my radio show, The Jukebox, can now be heard on CFRC 101.9 FM out of Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario. The show is all-inclusive. I only play music that I love and think that you'll love too. So tune in every Tuesday morning from 10 a.m. to noon right here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
don't live by the rules. Wolves don't live by the rules. Valleys to hills, you can hear the cry. They have to fight to stay alive. No one can change it. Mother Nature knows the reason why. Oh, wolves don't live by the rules. Wolves don't live by the rules. They're born to kill. Cry of the wild is the only way they can see. Oh, wolves don't live by the rules. Wolves don't live by the rules.
Hi, this is Mark Marilainen, also known as Najuan. You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM.
And, Dad, you're here with Aboriginal Voices, and thanks, Mark, for jumping in and sharing that with everybody. Yes, you are with 101.9 FM. And CFRC, you know, we do lots of really fun things here at CFRC. One of them is we're campus and community broadcasters. And so if you're interested in coming in and learning how to do broadcasting, whether it's for podcasts or for live news gathering and sharing news on the CFRC, and in fact, there's a connection right across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Network. So you can have fun. You can have a lot of fun. Meet great people, lots of people that over the years that we've had around CFRC who have gone on to use their skills from here, and others who've just gone on and enjoy doing them as a hobby. So a lot of fun. Songs we just had. That last song that was sort of upbeat, that keeps me going in the evening, is Willie Thrasher's song, Wolves Don't Play by the Rules. You got to think about the words in that one. Sean and I talked about the words in the House of the Rising Sun. There's another one that changes depending on what group actually does the singing of Wolves Don't Play by the Rules. Check it out again if you can't. Well, call in and let us know or write in to us, aboriginalvoices@cfrc.ca. That's Aboriginal Voices, all one word, all lowercase letters. Aboriginal Voices at cfrc.ca. We'd be happy to have you, you know, send in and tell us what you think, and if you found other covers of the song Wolves Don't Play by the Rules. And or look up the words and check and see how would they fit into your community, you know. The word wolves. Yeah, it doesn't have to be that four-legged animal on the that goes in the woods. Hunting caribou or muskox in the Arctic. Yeah. Sean, I was just really quickly going to ask you about caribou and muskox. I've been reading maps and some data about the two creatures that I just mentioned. One was with the muskox, and, you know, it shocked me to think that muskox are so far north in Canada that they hardly see the sun.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. They are so, they're up, what is it, alert and resolute, those places, and even farther north than that. I thought, wow, how do they survive is my question, because it's pretty cold up there. But
Siberia?
They stretch into Siberia, but I'm talking about northern Canada.
Oh, we're just talking about the Canadian ones?
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
But muskox are fascinating to me in terms of being a huge mammal that can survive in extremely cold areas.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Seems that they've been in Texas as well.
At one time.
Like they were just visiting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it got too warm for them.
So, yeah, we're going to go south.
When were they in Texas? Do you know?
Yeah. The Pleistocene. Pleistocene?
Mm-hmm. Pleistocene, yeah.
Pleistocene period?
Mm-hmm. Oh, my. You're going back a lot.
Back in the day, I guess.
Yeah, more than a million years ago.
Well, that's, yeah.
Yeah. So they've evolved a fair bit from
then. There's a whole bunch of them from the Alaska to Texas,
mm-hmm.
and maybe even the Mexico.
Oh, wow. Anyway,
lousy with the muskox.
Oh. That's why the wolves have chased them away or taken them out in their communities. Who knows? But there used to be woolly mammoth as well, wasn't there? One time back when they... So maybe the climate was just so cold or cool that,
Says there used to be the Laurentian ice sheet.
Oh, yeah. That covered much of where we are right now.
Apparently, yes.
Mm-hmm.
It was a massive sheet of ice.
Yes.
Millions of square miles, including most of Canada,
mm-hmm.
and a large portion of the northern United States. Wow.
So that's why woolly mammoth and the muskox would have survived in the cold area, because that would have taken them back.
Yeah, they had ice to walk on.
And the other one I told you about was with the caribou.
Caribou.
So, yeah, the caribou, we're just going to talk very briefly about caribou because they're four major, we call them herds, or the scientists call them major herds, but the caribou, with an eye. And their numbers have been going down, had been going down since the, you know, early 1970s, and they stabilized in a couple of areas, and there are, but I don't know, the ones that roam Northwest Territories have gone way down.
It says here that the caribou could also be referred to as a reindeer.
Mm.
You know, like the ones what takes Santa's sled.
Right, yeah. I thought the reindeer we refer to being in Lapland. No. That would be far north of Scandinavia.
Lapland?
There you go. Now you're going to say, where's that? But we got to go, Sean.
All right.
Because we're going to have a special guest that I talked with. And you know, you're going to kind of like the music that she plays as well. She is a very accomplished musician. So,
good.
All right. So we're going to go to that interview that I did, and then we're going to play two songs afterwards, Chanson de Real and Toronto Real. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. All right. I'm going to take you right away, Alyssa. Alyssa, I'm glad to have you here at CFRC, right here in our studios with us, live here in Kingston, Ontario. And I want folks to get to know you a little bit before we dig into your work these days. Tell me where you grew up.
Right, yeah, Tanchi, Alyssa Nishnikashon. My name is Alyssa. I'm originally from Winnipeg, also known as Saint Boniface, also known as Treaty One. I have Red River Métis roots that connect back to Louis Riel's ancestors, and I also have Ukrainian, Belgian, and Franco-Manitoban roots. And my Métis family names are Noe and Rissette. And I grew up playing the fiddle. My parents got the idea as young university students to bring their child to violin lessons. And so started on Suzuki. And then by the time we left for Toronto or Tacaronto when I was 10, my mother was drawn to reclaiming her culture and specifically getting involved with Métis community events. And it was through that desire to reconnect that she brought us to come to know Métis fiddling and the repertoire and specifically connecting with Indigenous fiddle ally Anne Letterman, who also then connected us. And when I say us, I have three younger brothers who are also musicians. And so we started connecting with Anne, and then later on connected with Anne's mentors, including Lawrence Teddy Boy Hool, and also with John Arcan, the master of the Métis fiddle. James Chichu was an incredible Cree fiddler from Moose Factory. And little by little, by reconnecting with that culture, we then learned more and more about the fiddle repertoire, and we began to get requests to perform as a quartet for events. And so my youngest brother basically grew up on the stage because there's about a 10-year difference between us. And, you know, at first it was just kind of cutesy. It was like we were trying to figure out, okay, you're going to play an open string here on the cello, because he played the cello. And we just figured out a way to... as you know, we kind of grew up on stage as a quartet, and it really allowed for me to connect with my roots through this the language of music that I always felt was a safe haven for me.
And when you did this in Toronto, there's a good group of people there who are supporting it all. But were you on stage and traveling around, or just, you know, a lot of folks just have their own local community and they stay there?
Right. Yeah. No, we traveled. We got invited to play at the fifth anniversary of the Smithsonian Native American Indian Museum in Washington. We played for the Aboriginal Pavilion at the Vancouver Olympics. We've done a bunch of opening ceremonies for various Indigenous games that have happened over the years. So quite a bit of traveling. And we still sometimes do some traveling. Like my brother and I were in Timmins a couple weeks ago playing for a Métis event. And it's a joy to be able to give back to community in a way by showing up and making myself available to play this music.
There's so much more available, you know, in the last 10 years. You know, we're talking right now in 2023, but in the last 10 years there's been a cultural change and a shift for acceptance of some of this music and some of the ideas and storytelling and people coming into their communities. So are you finding that as well everywhere you go across Canada?
Yeah, there's even more of a desire to highlight the fiddle, especially in Métis communities. And also not just highlighting the fiddle, but moving away from the typical four pieces that my elder said that he almost refused to play, which was Big John McNeil, Maple Sugar, Whiskey Before Breakfast, and St. Anne's Reel.
They've been played a few times, and he doesn't want to do it again. Eh?
Yeah. But depending on the event that you go to, actually, the fiddle, old-time fiddle, especially in Manitoba, you'll hear those songs on repeat. And you know, I think it's fine for it to be highlighted, but at the same time, I feel like there's so much vastness in the repertoire of Métis fiddle that it's nice to actually expand the ear's range for familiarity.
Mm-hmm. And that brings us to you getting involved in writing your own music. And so how many have you been able to put together in the past 5-6 years?
I haven't written a whole lot on my own. It's more of a more recent thing. I'm often in a place of collaboration. However, this past year, I did write a piece for solo violin and string quartet called A Search for Resonance. And it was kind of my own exploration of our human experience here and where do we come from and where are we now? And using some of my own soundscape techniques from being a classical musician to also incorporating some Métis fiddle music. So that's a recording that's going to come out sometime next year that was written for Mayumi Zeiler. And she's a beautiful classical violinist and a former teacher of myself and one of my brothers. And I also wrote a couple of tunes that were published in the Royal Conservatory of Music's syllabus for violin. One of them is actually called Homage to the Red River. And for those of you who aren't familiar with Métis fiddle music, it's said that for each Métis fiddler, they have their own version of the Red River jig. So I kind of created my own classical-esque play on the Red River and was influenced by a recording from this older gentleman. Or I should say older recorded gentleman, Granny Fagna. He's passed on many, many years ago. However, he was one of the oldest fiddlers that Ann Letterman had documented way back when she was doing her studies. And it's really thanks to her that there's so much of the old repertoire still alive. However, the aliveness is only in recorded form. So that's only one part of being alive. It being able to be performed live is another thing. And that's something that I'm working towards, like playing and extending the range of my repertoire, but then also passing it on, teaching the repertoire. It's one of the gifts that's been highlighted for me by my elders. I've been sort of given this nickname. I won't call it a spirit name because it's not. It's more of like it's being seen as having hummingbird energy. So that ability to navigate between the past, present, and future. And I do this in many different ways, like the fact that I've gone and had such a passion for learning the old music and then bringing it into now and then also sharing it, teaching it to the next generation. But I also say that my other futurist ability with the hummingbird energy is that I'm taking the Métis fiddle music to beyond where it existed before. For example, I've playing it on viola. I've played it on electric fiddle with loops and effects. And so really bringing it to other spaces. I also did a collaboration with DJ Shub for an opening event where it was like Métis fiddle and like indigenous hip hop. Like so cool.
Yeah, too clashing. and everybody loving it, right?
Yeah.
I see the passion in your face as you talk to me. I wish people could be seeing this. But one of the things that came up in my brain was, one, you mentioned you love teaching and being in the classroom teaching. But before we do that, we've got a lot of people who are at University of Queens or RMC, the Royal Military College here in Kingston, or even in the community colleges locally. And I'm just wondering, what advice right away would you give to some of the young people listening to you saying, this is your passion, music? They have passions, whether it's in music or something else, their heritage. What advice would you give them right now?
I would say one is know that your skills are always transferable. So for me, it was like, at a certain point, I was really going towards a classical music career, and I was auditioning for orchestra positions. And eventually, I realized that wasn't really my thing. And so I thought more about, okay, what space does Alyssa want to occupy within this artistic space? And then it was, oh, I actually really am passionate about teaching. I'm also passionate about research. So bringing those two things together and offering something that is unique is something that I would recommend to those of folks who are pursuing an artistic career, like, create your own space within, because there's limitless space within the artistic domain. So seeing that and being able to make up a space that nobody else but you can occupy, like knowing what your gifts are and shifting that focus in that direction, and sometimes knowing that it might work and it might not work.
Where did you get to go to school?
I initially was at the Royal Conservatory of Music during high school, and then for a couple of years after that. And then I took a few years off. I was kind of taking lessons with a former professor of U of T, and then I eventually ended up in Switzerland at a school in Lausanne, which is in the French part. And I spent 5 years there doing my undergrad and master's. And I was pretty focused on a classical career at that point. I had a lot of support and encouragement from my teachers. Like, also, I would say the other piece of this advice is, like, hearing that encouragement from the outside world and knowing that that is true also, and then pursuing from that place of, like, knowing and feeling encouraged. So given that, I continued to pursue this classical music career, but I also found that there was a part of me that wasn't fulfilled in that role, that had this, I want to say, rebellious side. Uh-huh. and I just felt like it wasn't the fullest picture of me. It was a way to really cultivate technique that could allow me to express myself with limitless possibilities and also be able to write with limitless possibilities. Mm-hmm. But I knew that that I was destined to do something else. So I returned back after the studies in Switzerland. And at the time, I was traveling back and forth to do a lot of performances with my brothers. We played in Batoche, I remember. And one summer, returned back to Winnipeg to do many family events. So I was always returning back. And then I ended up at the University of Montreal to do my doctorate of music. Mm. And when I started my studies there, I was really kind of focused on how to interpret folk music within a classically composed piece. And at the time, I was still, I was teaching Métis fiddle workshops at schools occasionally, but I was not narrowly focused on Métis culture as a whole within my academic career, because I'd never really fused the two prior to that. So when I started, I was like, oh, maybe I should be learning Hungarian, because there's lots of Hungarian music in classical music. And then little by little, I realized, no, that's still not, like, that's going to require years of learning, and I should go with what I actually know and have been learning about since I was young. So I then found a classical piece that had used the Red River Jig to show how one might take that classical piece and give it a Métis flair, folk flair. So really instructing somebody like myself who is classically trained but wants to adapt their way of playing to a fiddler's way of playing. So it's like untraining the tautness, like, mm-hmm. the pedagogy and going towards, like, how do I imitate somebody who's completely self-taught? Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting.
Actually, here's a question that came to me before when I was explaining that I'm going to be interviewing Alyssa. And the question is, what's the difference between a reel and a jig? Because you've used that now interchangeably in essence, but I noticed that on the new CD that's coming out with in collaboration with the Sultans of String, both of them are reels.
Yes, and if the confusion is about the Red River Jig, mm-hmm. then that it has jig in the title because of its connections to Métis jigging, the form of dancing. But also there was a scholars say that it's connected to this other piece from Quebec, La Grande Gigue Simple, and that word gigue means to dance in French. It has nothing to do with the jig dance or 6/8 timing. So that's what makes the Red River Jig kind of confusing in that sense. It's that title that gives us the illusion like, oh, it's going to be in 6/8 time, but it really isn't. It's a reel. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So that's helping a little bit. Okay. There are a lot of people out there saying, yes, yeah, I understand. Yeah. I'm going to have to play a few more for our audience, aren't I?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I guess so.
How can people find out about your music and where you're going to be? You're online on the web.
Yeah, my website is not quite as up to date. Alyssa Katrine with a K. .com. But I also am on Instagram. That's the easiest way. That's where I post the most up to date events. Although most of the time it's me supporting larger projects and being a part of something bigger. Mm-hmm. I kind of like that supportive role on stage because it just allows for me to do other things. And not spend less energy on being in charge of a big project because it's a lot.
But you enjoy playing music. It's obvious.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The other thing I wanted to mention to a lot of the young people who are studying, you said that you studied in Lausanne in Switzerland. That's in French, right? And then you studied in Montreal, all in French?
It was a mix, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So where did you learn the mischief?
Well, I didn't. My mischief is not actually fully there.
Okay, it's a work in progress.
It's a work in progress, and I'm learning bits and pieces of like the subtleties of French mischief. Mm-hmm. So there's communities like Timmins and Mattawa, Sudbury. These historic communities have their own version of French, which they call French Michif, or for them, it's really just Michif. So that would be easier for me to learn than the Michif that it comes from the prairies. It has a lot more Cree in the language. So I spent a bit of time with the Métis Nation of Ontario understanding the Métis languages or Métis language plus dialects situation. It's something, if somebody wants to study this, there's a topic.
Yeah, that's a topic for the grad chat folks. Yeah, we'll give that to them, yeah, because they do a wonderful job in kind of checking to see what studies are being done by masters or PhD candidates or postdocs. And they talk all about what they're doing. So we'll pass that one on to them.
Good.
Without Christine. But this is the fun part. You're sharing with everybody your love of music. And I assume it's not just one instrument, the violin. What other instruments do you play?
Well, I play viola, and I've become to really find my voice also and singing a lot more. So I had thought about trying to learn other instruments. At this point, I'm experimenting more with looping and pedals, creating different sounds with my fiddle itself rather than like picking up an entire instrument from scratch, because I have this inner self-critic that comes out and says, like, that's crap, you know? Yeah. So it was very good because I was able to figure out a way to play the violin in a way that my self-critic was like, yeah, that's fine.
But... Yeah, just put the earphones off to the side and keep going, right?
Yeah.
Don't listen to it. Yeah, that's funny. Now, I want to ask you about the project that is in collaboration with the Sultans of String and Christopher McCool. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've learned a fair bit about the project itself. But what's your involvement in it?
So... my brother Conlon was the first one to get involved in my family, because the four of us as Métis Fiddler Quartet are featured on the CD, and so My brother was very supportive in helping Chris get letters of support. And then eventually Chris put this album together, and then there was interest for concerts to come alive, for the whole project to come to the stage. And since I live in Toronto, and there's a need for a young feminine voice on stage, Chris thought that I should be a part of the touring team. So that's sort of how that all came to be. And we started rehearsing in this fall of last year, reviewing the pieces and learning them back to back, forwards and backwards. And it's been a whole journey to get to know folks. When you're doing a long-term project and in an intimate language such as music, it really creates this beautiful space for connecting with other humans.
There's a great group of people that when I read through, I thought, oh my goodness, look at all these people. This is great, you know. And we've used some of the music from several of the people in the group, including, I was surprised because the Aboriginal Voices here at CFRC has been going since 1994, and every Tuesday night, and we've just been having fun and meeting people all along the way and learning about new music. And when Mark and I did the first interview with the group that we're going through, I said, Najuan, we have your CD here at the radio station at CFRC. And he sat back in his chair. Oh, my. I was there in 2008. And so afterwards, I went into the archives here. And sure enough, it says, you know, summer of 2008 that it was stamped as being received here at CFRC. So this is great. And Don Ross was here even before that. He was at... he came and sat in our very old studio that's way over on the other side of the station here, and spent half an hour with me, and then raced back. I took him back down to a concert he was putting together, and that night did the concert in one of the abandoned churches. And then a number of others in the group. So mm-hmm. I'm really finding a difference. They're not all the same. Mm-hmm. None of them. And I'm finding that... For you, coming in with your creativity, are you being energized by being with the others, or are you contributing to their changes?
Oh no, it's an energetic exchange and collaboration. I mean, the whole project is Indigenous collaboration, mm-hmm. collaborators, collaborations, of course, I'm being energized, but I think it's like there's a receptivity loop where we are all giving and receiving simultaneously. Like, it's just very flowing. Even though we're walking through the fire, it's turned into like some flowing water.
Yeah, let's hope that water doesn't put the fire out. Yeah, that's pretty funny when I started going through the songs and what's there and the title. I keep going back to the title of the whole project that's going to be on stage. I keep thinking, you know, somebody's got a sense of humor over there, you know, in that group, because there's very, very gripping songs, and it, you have to not only hear it once, I find. This is my experience, is that when I listen to it several times over, I'm listening one time for how it takes me outdoors or reminds me to go thinking about outdoors. And other times it's the words, and I just listen to the words, and that gets me upset. So I have to go back to listening to being outdoors. But, it's been a really great opportunity for me. And I hope some of our listeners are enjoying it too. 23rd of January, you're going to be back here in Kingston mm-hmm. with the whole ensemble.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a couple guests that won't be part of that concert. There'll be virtual guests.
Oh, okay.
However, there will be plenty of us in person as well. Yeah, it's just a delight to be able to perform with these humans on stage. It's the Sultans, the guys in the Sultans are just so generous, safe, loving, kind, respectful humans. It's been nice for my nervous system as a woman to be around that kind of masculine energy, you know, because there's some stuff that sometimes gets brought to the surface, especially when you start spending lots of time with people. And so it's been a really beautiful project for me to be involved with.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, not only on an artistic level, but on my own personal journey.
The interesting thing, too, is that we're going to take this back to you wanting to be or spending time teaching, is that in the afternoon of the 23rd, I think 1 o'clock, I think, is the time that school students are going to be in the Grand Theater here in Kingston. And they're going to participate. And my first thought, having been an elementary school teacher, or part of my career was that, and I thought, what's going to happen if I bring grade 2, grade 3, you know, 6, 7, 8-year-olds, and someone else brings a grade 7, 8 class, and, you know, we're looking at students 13, 14 years of age. Are you and all the rest going to be able to accommodate their interests and their listening, or are you just going to say, this one, the grade twos, enjoy it, but we're focused on the grade seven eights?
I think in a show context, because I do my own kind of workshops and assemblies for schools where there's different age groups, and you just instead of thinking about it that there might need to be some targeted learning, I think that you just figure out a way to have a show that can reach as many people as possible. And regardless of what they walk away with, the fact that they showed up is amazing. And the experience of being at a show is enough. For me, at least, when I think about it, because some days, like as a teacher, I'm wondering, okay, what did they actually walk away with? I never really know. At the end of the day, I always know that they heard music, and that's important because I think that's also something that is kind of dying off, is people going out to concerts. So having these opportunities for young folks to attend concerts, I think, is important because it kind of gives them that experience that they know what it's all about. Love that.
Yeah. Alyssa, I appreciate all the time you've given us here, and your happy smile, your voice is just carrying the great ideas to a lot of people. So thank you very much. I appreciate this.
Chimigwech, thank you for having me.
And I'm going to give the last word to you. Think of the young teenager who's struggling to get through this year. What advice are you going to give to those folks?
Rest and know you did plenty enough this year. And say, I love you in the mirror. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Alyssa.
Thank you, Chimigwech. Merci.
Oh, yeah.